Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Kirk on the line. And before we return to the ignorance of Paul, let's first turn to the brilliance of our second hour co-host, Kirk. I understand that you looked up some things over the weekend and had some thoughts you wanted to share.
It's still the attack of Paul, but
oh, okay. On topic.
If you were having a hypothetical, let's just call it a hypothetical conversation with the Christian, mm-hmm. you ask him the question, who founded Christianity?
Mm-hmm.
Who would they come up with?
Well, they'd say Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
And of course, the first response you would have to that is, why was there no one named Jesus Christ any time prior to the 16th or 17th century? That mm-hmm. for all of the human history prior to that, no one was named Jesus Christ. So how could that be the founder of your religion? That'd be the first, of course. And then I said, okay, if you get the name right, then how come he was wholly opposed to everything your religion stands for?
Mm-hmm. And to make a valid point on that, I was thinking that if they said Paul, then you've got a wealth of material. You can go through.
Right, okay. And of course, the answer is Paul. Paul is the founder of the Christian religion. Yeah.
But they don't know that. Most of the time, they're going to say Jesus, Yahushua. So if that was the argument, mm-hmm. What I did is I looked up two quotes and then tied it in with a quote that Yahweh gave to Abraham, and it's pretty straightforward. You've heard all these before, but mm-hmm. I thought they play well.
Mm-hmm.
Yahushua said, because this is your founder, Yahushua said, you should not think or assume that I actually came to tear down and validate, put an end to, mm-hmm. if you don't mind mm-hmm. me reading,
yeah.
into or discard the Torah or the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
I actually came not to create a division or dismiss or invalidate or discard the Torah, but instead to completely fulfill, to proclaim, to carry out, to render perfectly. And now, if he's the Passover lamb,
mm-hmm.
he's the lamb slain from the foundation of the earth, or world,
mm-hmm.
they keep
mm-hmm.
saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he says that, you've got some serious, serious problems right out the get-go.
Yeah, it's the first presentation of Yahushua's words and what's called the Christian New Testament
uh-huh.
is the Sermon on the Mount.
Right.
And 5, 6, and 7 of the Sermon on the Mount, three whole chapters of Matthew, completely obliterate the Christian religion.
Okay. So.
And so yeah, if your answer is Jesus Christ blows you out of the water with his admission that there will be nothing that replaces the Torah ever, and that to come with this notion that he founded a new religion based upon opposing the Torah and replacing it with a Christian New Testament, he just said, don't think of that for a moment. It just isn't true. So yeah, you're screwed, blue, and tattooed if you're a Christian if you read what Yahushua said, because he was opposed to your religion.
Now, don't the Christians, that's the way I was told, that we were spreading the gospel around, and the gospels were the four eyewitness accounts, or the four secondary accounts.
Yeah, of course, the term gospel is a 17th century term. It means God's spell. God was the chief god of the Germanic religions. And there is no such term anywhere in in those accounts. It's the Greek word that they're using, means, good, beneficial, healing, message or messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way you get, it's like, ecclesia being changed to church, evangelium being changed to gospel it's not a translation of it. It's a complete replacement of the term. And of course, what the term that Yahushua would have used in Hebrew is he would have spoken of Tob Malach.
Mm-hmm.
Malach means message and messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Tob means good, beneficial, healing. And so, you know, you're being, I'm going to use the term, a person is being ignorant when they think they're spreading the gospel. because there is no such thing. But beyond that, isn't Montagnard the one of only two eyewitness accounts?
That's my point. I mean, if you're going to go around the world, raise money to spread this message from Montagnard, and he's talking this way, quoting Yosha, something Paul did not do, then you've got to quote that, and now you have to deal with it.
That's correct.
That is correct.
And that means you can't be a Christian, because Christianity is based on distancing oneself from the Torah. Christians misname the Torah just like they misname church. You know, church and gospel are also fictitious names. A fictitious name for the Torah, wholly fictitious, is law. And they say that they are no longer bound to the law because they are now under the gospel of grace, when, in fact, Yosha, whom they claim is the founder of the religion, said just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So either he wasn't God and lied, or he was a diminished manifestation of Yahweh and told the truth, at which case your religion disappears.
So now, the next and last quote I wanted to throw out at you just for discussion's sake was, now let's go back to Bereshit 17. And, of course, that's, and God Almighty said to Abraham, and for you, you should continuously and habitually observe, Shamar, my family-oriented covenant relationship. You and your seed after you throughout their generations, dwelling places and eras of time. Now, if that's true, then he's either talking the only arguments you could possibly come up with, because Yosha has already said you can't throw any of this away, and this is the heart of the covenant. I mean, the heart of the of the Genesis here. And he says, so this is either Yahweh talking to Abraham and his seed and only his seed forever, or he's talking about anyone and everyone who shamars Torah, observes the Torah habitually, and wants to join his family or in a covenant relationship.
Yeah. Either way, you're in real trouble, because if you look at literal seed in terms of descendants, guess who's one of the descendants?
Yosha.
Yosha. And if you're dealing, and therefore he has to observe, which he did, the covenant, which is presented in only one place, the Torah.
Yeah.
And if you look at it figuratively, which we also do legitimately, he's with Abraham, he is offering the covenant. And so those of us who inherit the covenant, who are not direct descendants of Abraham, do so by being adopted into the family. And the way to do that is to observe, no matter where you live, no matter where you are, on a habitual, ongoing basis, the every nuance that is communicated regarding the covenant.
Right. And it was always open to anyone who was among you.
Correct.
You know, like when it always came out of Egypt, it's always anyone who's anyone from any nation, any places, any foreigners that are with you, that understands and wishes to be part of the covenant, they're open to join. It was never just Abraham and his physical line.
Correct. It makes it very clear. There's one Torah for everyone.
Over and over and over.
There's one covenant for everyone.
One covenant for everyone.
Now, but there's five terms and conditions for participating, and those terms and conditions also apply to everyone.
Is there any deal throughout the whole Torah, Prophet, and Psalms where he changed the deal?
No. Did he ever change the Shabbat? Did he ever repeal any of the seven invitations to walk to him and become perfect?
No.
Does he ever repeal his Torah?
If he did, I shall miss it.
Yeah. Does he ever affirm his Torah?
Oh, constantly.
Does he ever affirm the ongoing nature of the covenant? For example, he says he's going to reaffirm it with Yisrael and Yahudem upon his return. So does he affirm it?
We know exactly when he's going to do it, but absolutely he will.
Does he ever deny his name and say, you know, that's how I was known then, but you can change my name and call me anything you'd like?
Yeah, that's that thing about renown. This is my name. I want to be remembered forever.
Forever?
It's kind of hard to argue with forever.
Yeah, so If you possess the knowledge that is presented in the Torah and prophets, and you compare that to what is written in the Christian New Testament, and you have the capacity to exercise good judgment, if you're rational, you'll find it impossible to be religious, impossible to be a practitioner of Judaism or Christianity or Islam or any religion. Matter of fact, I would go as far as to say, if you really know what Yahweh offered in his Torah and prophets, it'd be impossible even to be a socialist secular humanist if you were open-minded.
Well, but that's really defined by, at least I define it as, define the state. You know, just like the good earth people define, you know, worshiping the earth. I mean, it's, they make gods out of whoever they make gods. It's still, secular humanism is still a, they deify something.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, when we were together doing this on Friday, we were dealing with the passages where Paul said that those people, because who were deemed important because of their past, whom he met in Jerusalem at the summit, who he will then call out by name. They are Peter and John and James, using the Christian corruptions of their names. And he will say that their testimony meant absolutely nothing to him.
Well, let me tell you what God says about
that. Where does that leave us? God have to say?
Yeah, but the Torah, listen to what, that just struck a bell here. And then and I'll skip down to another little quote on my little notepads over here. He says, this is a tiny bit long, but let me go through it because it addresses that point completely. Therefore, whoever may at any time dismiss or attempt to do away with one of the smallest and least important of these instructions, prescriptions, which are enjoined or taught, but a word would be taught for me, and he may instruct and indoctrinate people in that manner, which is contrary to the Torah instruction, he will actually be provided the name of lowly and little and be insignificant by the kingdom of heaven. And then the second verse I'll do right.
We have the music here, and we'll continue this after the break. But what does Paulos mean in Latin?
Oh, well, the good part. This is really unique because it's little and lowly.
Oh, there you go.
Insignificant.
Mm-hmm. So, Kirk, as Yosha continued with his Sermon on the Mount, he went from being general, like, don't for a moment think that a religion based upon the notion that there is a New Testament, that there is now salvation through the gospel of grace, that there is a new institution called a church, and that it is got God's approval to replace the Torah's teaching and its covenant with something else, that he begins his Sermon on the Mount saying, that is not true. Don't think that for a moment. It is absolutely bogus. Then he gets specific, and he says that anybody who would tell you anything that is contrary to the Torah, anybody would say that anything in the Torah has been annulled, that person is going to be called lowly and little. In other words, polos.
Right.
In Latin.
Right.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead? Because
it's the last sentence that follows up answers the question that we were speaking to before began.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and then, or by contrast, whoever might act upon it and teach it, and we're still talking about the Torah, this will properly be referred. This will properly be referred to and named great and important among those who reign in heaven. Now, Paul just said, these people are of no consequence to me. My reason for reading it was to, if nothing else, to say, Yahweh and the people in heaven, they think he's extremely important, the people who teach this, as opposed to, and the people that were teaching it were, of course, Shimon Kefish, Yochanan, Jacob, and the small circle.
The Kirkmeister?
Well,
Yeah. It's true. I mean,
it's
true. And we, you know, we spoke about dignity and the lack of it. And I was telling Scott as we were talking about dignity, I've never tried to apply the term dignified to myself, and I'm absolutely opposed to thinking that you can be afforded the dignity by a human institution. But the fact of the matter is, and even the definition, you know, to esteem, honor, all that kind of stuff, that's nonsense. But I think there is a dignity that comes from being part of the covenant.
Well, certainly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Yahweh esteems us. He esteems his children. And he honors his children with an inheritance that provides empowerment and enrichment and perfection and eternity. So these are good things. But you're right. What Yosha is saying here is clear as words of law. There's going to be a guy come along called Paul, and he is going to tell you that the Torah is bad and that it's incapable of saving and that everything in the Torah has been annulled and that God authorized him to come up with a different plan called the Gospel of Grace, and that that plan is that this imposter is going to say that that plan is associated with me. And he says, I'm telling you right up front that this person is going to be named lowly and little. That's Paulos. And you ought not believe him because the opposite is true. And at the same time, this person is going to try to demean the testimony of those that I chose and that I taught. And I'm going to tell you that their testimony we esteem. We view as very important and valuable. And that other individual, he's going to negate it. We're opposites. Hey, and what did Yosha say about a person who claimed to be an apostle that was opposed to Yahochanan in Ephesus?
He said say that again.
Yeah, in Ephesus, in the open letter that Yosha dictated to Yahochanan, one of the things he told the Ephesians that he was so proud of them, so pleased with them about, is that they chose to distance themselves from. They did not accept the rhetoric of the false apostle, or the one who claimed to be an apostle and was not, but clung to the first love, which was Yahochanan, and Yahochanan's teaching about Yosha. And yet, in the totality of Paul's letters, he is most ruthless. Well, he's probably most ruthless at Shimon Kefesh, Peter, at the Jerusalem summit. But very close to that is his attack on Yahochanan, where he says, listen, if he baptized you, that was counterproductive. I've got to rebaptize you. If he taught you what he taught you was untrue, you've got to reject everything he said and listen to me. He says, you know, I'd prefer to have him castrated. And there's only one person that opposed Yahochanan in Ephesus. It's Paul. Now, Paul did send Timothy there to do the same thing, which is why it's plural.
But that's his representative. Still Paul's message.
Goodness. Yeah. How do you deal with that if you're an informed, rational Christian? Every place you look, Yosha is preparing people to reject the lie that is Paul. You know, speaking of this one named lowly and little, didn't Yosha tell us in the Sermon on the Mount probably the most saddest thing I think he ever said, I came in my Father's name and you reject me, and yet one will come in his own name and him you will accept. And Christians don't even know who they're talking about. They don't even know how they rejected him, but renaming him Jesus Christ after he's some pagan god, wholly disassociated from the Father's name. I mean, you can't reject that he came in his Father's name any more than you can as a Christian calling him Jesus Christ.
No.
And reading your Christian New Testament and rejecting what you call the Old Testament. I mean, that is about as...
A total rejection.
And there's only one person... who is who can be associated in some way with Yahusha, who came in his own name, that Christians accepted in such a way that it required them to repudiate and reject Yahusha. And I could give you every person who has ever lived on this planet from that moment he said it in 33 CE, actually probably 30 CE, mm-hmm. to today. And the only person who qualifies is Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, Shimon Kefesh didn't change his name. He didn't come in a name that he chose.
No, the Catholics changed his name.
Right. Jacob didn't change his name. He didn't come in a name that somebody else chose.
No.
Yahochanan, whose name means Yah was merciful, didn't change his name or come in a name of that somebody else chose for him. Matanyah, which means Yahweh gives, he didn't change his name. The only person who changed his name is Shaul, by his own admission, became Paul. He changed his name. And his whole testimony was based on repudiating the Torah, rejecting it, rejecting its covenant as incapable of saving, and embracing his belief in his gospel of grace. I mean, Paul's it. I mean, Yahusha warned him about it. What's Paul's great claim? That he was converted on the road to Damascus, and he went from being a ruthless killing rabbi to the lone spokesperson for God to all of the Gentile world because he saw him as flashing light on the road to Damascus. Well, what does Yahusha say in the Olivet Discourse? His kind of farewell conversation to his disciples.
Yeah. Well, I don't have the exact quote, but it's, I'm not in the desert. I'm not in the secret rooms. I'm not some mystical
right.
religion.
If somebody claims to see me in the wilderness, reject him. Because the whole world's going to see me when I return as light. Not one, two, or three individuals.
Yeah.
Reject him.
So Yahweh's not showing off when he's doing all this. He's actually doing this to let everybody know, look, it's not that hard. This is you should to know these guys when they show up. Here they are.
Right. Yeah.
He's not just trying to say, look, I know the future and da-da-da, and I'm putting on a show for you. He's really, it's the biggest warning in the history of mankind.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, 666 years before Paul would write his first letter, this one that we've been considering to the Galatians, called Galatians, which would undermine the Torah, calling it pornography, and that would say that the God who authored the Torah was impotent and could not save, and that his Torah, rather than liberating enslaves, that 666 years before that, didn't Yahweh issue a prophecy through Chabaouk that Paul himself would quote, that calls him out by name, that says his name is Shaul, and that he will be egotistical, and that he will claim the Gentiles as his lone audience, that he will emerge at the time the Mikra are being fulfilled, that he would be opposed to circumcision, and didn't Yahweh say that Shaul is the plague of death?
Plague of death. Can you imagine being called the plague of death by God?
Ooh. I mean, it's one thing to be said that Shaul is deadly. It's one thing to say that Shaul misleads. But he named Paul by name and then said he is the plague of death. To escalate a disease to plague status.
That's pretty serious stuff.
You're wiping out entire populations, aren't you?
Yeah. That's what the plague did.
Yeah.
What a plague does.
Paul robbed the lives of 3 billion souls. That's pretty much of a plague, don't you think?
So if the Torah doesn't save, then why did Yahusha save? The doorway is exacting and specific, and the way to life is unpopular, which leads to life.
Right. And speaking, by the way, of the Torah.
And
if the way is broad, like religious, like 3 billion people, 3 billion souls, which would be popular and broad, why did he say that leads to death and destruction of the soul?
Yeah. Okay, so now if you're a preacher, mm-hmm. read all this and you knew this. Mm-hmm. The only thing you can do is, I think, is basically what they did do on the big mega churches. They mm-hmm. so they modernized the church, and they went to, in my view, they went to the positive thinkers, you know, like Think and Grow Rich guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just became do-gooders for Jesus. And that's what they sell. Because you can't sell this if you cannot sell the, now just take it in context, the gospel message. You can't take Matthew and mm-hmm. and say this to an audience truthfully,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
correctly translated, and sell Christianity. You're dead in the water when you they would throw rocks at you.
Correct.
Or they ought to. So yeah. You have to read. The only way you can sell 2.5 billion people or more, you've got to change this thing, or else you have to have so much power they can't resist it like the Muslims do. You know, you let
or them you land. Just ignore.
Or just
you'd have to ignore Yosha's three longest, most detailed verbal presentations. The longest is by far is what we call the Sermon on the Mount. It's really the Instruction on the Mount. So the Instruction on the Mount, which is first and foremost the largest audience he ever spoke to, the longest speech he ever made, you have to throw it away. The next thing you have to throw away is the his ruthless and vicious attack on the religious and political leaders that's also in Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Around 23, I think. And then the next thing you have to throw out, which was his second longest uninterrupted speech. And then his third longest uninterrupted witness testimony is the Olivet Discourse.
Yeah.
And the entirety of the Olivet Discourse undermines Christianity from its beginning to its end. So you'd have to throw out all of that. And then most everything he said in between, because most everything he's recorded saying in between is, you know, people have a question. He says, well, what does the Torah say? Why are you asking me that question? What does the Torah say? Or he's saying, you know, send us a witness. And I say, well, if you don't believe what Moshe provided, then which is the Torah, why are you going to believe me or anybody else? I'd ask you a question, Kirk. Mm-hmm. Doesn't Moshe and through Yahweh's inspiration in Devarim, Deuteronomy, not once but twice, provide anyone who is willing to be observant a test to use to determine whether or not somebody is speaking for God and is inspired by God or not?
Oh, yeah, that's Devarim. I forget the exact number, but yeah.
Twice.
Yeah, twice, yeah. So.
Yeah. And in those two, and they run between the 8th chapter and the 13th chapter of Devarim, of Deuteronomy. In both of those, there are seven conditions
mm-hmm.
that you have to meet to be considered a inspired speaker on behalf of Yahweh. You know, and there are things like your presentation of history have to be flawless. And Paul couldn't get his past right or anything right. Second, you have to include prophecy, and they all have to be right. Paul had two predictions, both of which he got wrong. Third, your testimony has to be wholly consistent with what Yahweh has said in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Paul contradicted it.
Yeah.
And so he just goes on, and he talks about attitude. And if somebody's pumped up with pride, they're not speaking for God. So he goes through and he lists the seven criterion, and Paul is in violation of all seven of them.
Absolutely. Just can't.
So you get right back down to it. If you're going to be a Christian, you either have to be ignorant, unaware of these things, or irrational. You can't make an informed conclusion. You're incapable of exercising good judgment, either incapable of it, or you're rendered incapacitated somehow by your religion.
No, it's just dead in the water.
Yeah. And just in the second chapter here of Galatians, when, you know, Paul admits that he was called up to Jerusalem. It's chronicled in the book of Acts. This is the Jerusalem summit, most important meeting that took place after Shavuot. And he is totally dismissive. He says of the disciples, their testimony, their witness was meaningless to me. And that their calling, their position, their being called out by and chosen by Yosha and taught by Yosha, that was
inspired
irrelevant.
By the set apart spirit.
Yeah.
And empowered.
Yeah. They said nothing which was of any benefit according to
worthless.
Paul. And on that basis, then, if you're going to be a Pauline Christian, if you're going to read Paul's letters, if you're going to believe Paul, you have to reject
everything.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You've got to toss them away. You've got to toss away 1st and 2nd Peter. You've got to toss away 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. You've got to toss away Revelation. You've got to toss away the book of James. It's all got to go. Because Paul, you think, is inspired. And if he says it's irrelevant, meaningless to him, it's got to be meaningless to you. If Paul's inspired.
Yeah.
So now what do you have?
Well,
so how do you follow the Christian Jesus when you only have Paul's letters? Because the Pauline letters never once quote him accurately. They only have one snippet, and he even got that wrong.
Yeah,
now you don't know. You don't have a clue what he said. Back to Paul creating the religion. These are fighting words.
Yeah.
You know, Paul is saying, you know, later through 14 years also, I went up to Jerusalem along with Barnabas, having also taking along Titus. And I went up from an unveiling revelation, which the beneficial, regarding the beneficial message and messenger, which I preach among the Gentile races from my own uniquely and separate point of view. But then to the opinions and suppositions, the presumptions, not somehow, that into foolishness and stupidity without purpose or falsely I might have run. To the contrary, not even Titus, a Greek, was compelled or forced or pressured or obligated to be circumcised. So, he's out there, and just as Yahweh predicted 666 years prior, he's out denouncing the Torah and particularly the sign of the covenant, circumcision. And so he's talking about the presumptions of the disciples.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, they didn't even compel Titus to be circumcised, therefore... inferring that he's right, when, of course, it's a logical flaw here, because doesn't compel anybody to do anything.
No.
So the disciples wouldn't either. That doesn't mean that Paul wasn't running in vain, because he was. Yahweh said in Habakkuk that no one will be satisfied who believes him. But then on the account of the false brothers brought in surreptitiously under false pretenses, who sneaked into the group secretly to spy upon the freedom and liberation that we possess in Christo, in order that they might actually make us subversant. You know, it's interesting. He is talking about...
Where did they bring them in from?
The only people who would have been there would have been the beneficiaries of Pesach, Matzah, Bukkotim, and Shavuot, when they were celebrated for real in 33 CE, your 4,000 year. But it's only those who are part of the covenant family that would have been there. But what he's saying here is that if you observe the Torah as your means to come to be part of the covenant family, that you are robbing people of freedom that is somehow available in Christo, in Christ. So what did Christo say about freedom from the Torah?
You don't want freedom from the Torah, you'll die.
Freedom from the Torah is death.
You
got it. If you want to be free of the Torah, that's just fine.
Yeah,
it's just that
go off and
you're
going
to... Yeah, but to associate... freedom from the Masayah is only to associate the Masayah with the Torah. I mean, it's the Torah that provides the freedom that Yosha is delivering.
Having come to know the Torah, have you ever felt any more free?
No, it's No, it's a wholly liberating book, and even the things that are presented as instructions, you know, regarding food or regarding hygiene, the instructions on their face are beneficial, but they're not limiting. They're almost all of the instructions are presented to teach us something, to provide, you know, beneficial guidance. No, I've never felt freer.
No.
You know, the reason I feel so free is the person that Yahweh said was the most righteous, the most beloved, the most vindicated was Dode. And, you know, Dode violated...
missed the mark quite a lot. So that's...
Ooh, yeah, by his own admission. And yet, he is wholly and completely upright and vindicated, which means that we can relax in the Torah. The Torah was written to make us look perfect. The Torah was written to make us look good.
Yeah, well, Abraham was no great shakes, but he called him righteous. He called him so.
Dumb. Right, exactly. I mean, he did too.
He didn't earn it. He certainly didn't earn it. Yeah.
No. And so, you know, I'm wholly liberated. You know, the first statement that Yahweh etched in stone. You know, I am Yahweh, your God, who delivered you, who liberated you from slavery. So no, he's the liberator. The greatest of all the liberators.
So to have a Christian Bible, you've got to take the Torah, put the Torah in it, but change everything and redefine Torah's term as law. And you've got to take the second part of it.
You've got to be against it. You've got to be opposed to it, even though you claim it was inspired by your God.
And then you take all the witness writings and you twist those and change those so you can contradict it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put the third part of the Christian Bible now becomes the basically Marcion's Bible with all of Paul's words. And then you have to somehow promote that is the answer, which is that's the dumbest Bible you ever saw.
Well, Paul does have a Bible. There's no question about it. 13 letters plus Hebrews. Yeah. He's got a Bible.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got a religion. And it's fooled billions.